Okay. 10-2031, United States versus Snow. And Mr. McKeever has 5 minutes to argue, and Mr. Robinette has 5 minutes for rebuttal. Hi, Mr. McKeever.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is John McIver, together with my...
McIver.
Not a correction, Your Honor, I was just introducing.
No, not. I watch Saturday Night Live.
My colleague, Mr. Robinette, and I are here under 7-Eleven license through the Bloom Legal Clinic at Northwestern University.
Great to have you.
Thank you. Together we represent the appellant, Ernest Snow. Mr. Snow respectfully requests that the denial of his motion to suppress be reversed for two related reasons. First, based upon the totality of particularized facts in this case, no objective officer should have reached the conclusion that Snow was reasonably suspected to be armed and dangerous.
I want to ask how far back into the course of events you're digging here, because the 911 operator listens to the account from the neighbor of this man casing a house across the street and draws the inference that the neighbor thinks at least an attempted burglary is in progress. And the neighbor gives a pretty detailed account of the man's appearance in his truck. So the 911 operator says to the responding officers, attempted burglary, uses that phrase. And within minutes, you know, 2 minutes, two blocks, one of the officers pulls the car over and believes he has in front of him somebody who's about to commit a burglary. So given a totality test, is it your position that the 911 operator mischaracterized and we should go all the way back to there, or is the police officer entitled to rely on, you know, an account from the 911 operator? Where's the problem?
Both of those, Your Honor. First, the officer is allowed to rely on the 911 call under Drake, but the officer's actions are still limited in scope by a reasonableness standard.
But why isn't it reasonable at that point, then, for the officer to think people frequently enough arm themselves when they're considering any kind of breaking and entering offense, whether we want to call it burglary or whatever, that I'm entitled to do a Terry frisk? It's just Terry, and they certainly would have found the gun stuck in the waistband. That's what Terry was for.
First, Your Honor, because the assertion that this was a burglary in progress is a generalization.
Oh, no, no. The 911 caller said she saw someone trying to get into a house through a window. Now, doesn't that, to your mind, reasonably describe a possible burglary?
Exactly, Your Honor. That, rather than the assertion that this is a burglary, that is the particularized fact. What the caller said she observed. But that fact was taken in isolation. Rather than in a totality of the circumstances test, that one fact was considered in isolation by the officer to the exclusion of any other facts which were communicated to him.
What fact would you want if it was your window?
Your Honor, the facts that
I
were...
No, I'm never supposed to ask that, but I can't help it.
There were facts that were just simply not considered by the officer in this case. First of all, the caller did report that no entry had been made. The person then briefly went around to the back, and when he was returning to the front, seemed to be preoccupied with texting on his telephone. This simply isn't consistent with someone who is fleeing from the site of an ostensible attempted burglary.
Well, why is it inconsistent? It seems to me equally consistent with casing around the house and then maybe leaving to go get an extra tool or something. I mean, I don't know.
Taken in isolation, perhaps, Your Honor, but then consider the more facts that are available in this case. This is the middle of the day, it's broad daylight, and when he returned to his truck, he sat in this distinctive two-tone truck for at least a long enough period of time for the dispatcher to relay, he's in his truck, we'll let you know if he departs.
You know, you don't challenge the Terry stop at this point, right?
No, Your Honor.
I mean, so it not to challenge the Terry stop, it has to be based on the call. I mean, all there was the caller's call on dispatch. So, I mean, did something happen between the stop and the finding of the gun that should have stopped the frisk in operation?
There shouldn't have been a frisk in the operation because reasonable suspicion that Snow was armed and dangerous hadn't been established based on totality at that point. The other facts that were inconsistent with the idea that this was either a burglary or that there was reasonable suspicion that he were armed were not considered by this officer. In addition to the fact that he took time and did not appear to be fleeing from the scene of a burglary, think of all the facts that we see in all of these sort of Fourth Amendment cases. There's no testimony of the officer's personal observations in this case. Snow didn't appear nervous or agitated or furtive movements or any of the things that we see in all of these cases. There was no evasive answer on his part. All that we had was the allegation generally.
Then he preempts the frisk by spinning around and, which caused the officer to grab him.
I see that I'm moving into my rebuttal time. To briefly touch upon that point, though, Your Honor, a search under the Fourth Amendment has never turned merely on the physical touching. For instance, we have Katz, which is a search without a physical intrusion. We have Jacobson, which is a physical intrusion that's not a search. It's always been when the reasonable expectation of privacy is intruded upon or extinguished. There's precedent for that in this case. Consider United States versus Johnson. I know there are several in the record. This is 99 Johnson, 1 Binet. In Johnson, the officer had reached out to begin this frisk or this pat-down, and Mr. Johnson reached up, pushed the officer away, a struggle ensued, and a firearm was found. Not only was the initial seizure of Johnson found to be unreasonable, but the frisk by itself, the search by itself, was also found to be unreasonable on its own.
Look, the relevant point here is that the order to step out of the vehicle for purposes of a frisk, you concede, was legitimate.
No, Your Honor. He could have been ordered out of the vehicle under perhaps a MIMS order, which is an extended show hands order. But in this case, any reasonable person would understand the difference between please get out of the vehicle and stand where I can see you, and sir, get out of the vehicle, assume the position for a search. He knew the difference. Any reasonable person would know that difference. If there aren't any further questions, I'd reserve my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, Mr. Wharton. How are you? Yeah, well, not anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should say good afternoon. I was hoping it would be morning, but we get to be the last. May it please the court, my name is James Wharton. I represent the government here today, as I did before, the district court. I want to focus on the issues that your honors want to focus on. But what I heard from the argument for the appellant was this issue as if this officer is supposed to have cross-examined this complainant and make this sort of independent judgment, gee, should I frisk this guy? With all due respect, that is just absurd. I mean, this is a situation in which a police officer on the streets of Indianapolis gets called about a burglary in progress. That's what the dispatcher says, and he has a right to rely on that.
What if the dispatcher is really just somebody who is way overdramatic, and in fact the man was just walking down the sidewalk in front of the house and the busybody neighbor calls and so the dispatcher says, oh, it might be a burglary in progress. Any problem there?
Well, I appreciate your question, and here's my answer, Your Honor, and it's going to take some stages. But the point is this. The police officer hearing this dispatch doesn't hear what the 911 caller said. And I think in the brief, the appellant seems to presume that, which isn't the case. The point is, the police officer has to be allowed to rely on what the dispatcher says. Time is critical in these situations when you've got a violent crime like a residential burglary. The police officer isn't supposed to say, oh, gee, Mr. or Miss 911 caller, are you really sure? I mean, we don't have that luxury in this world. I'm sorry.
Let me then jump to one of the other points they made, which they
sure
may develop further on rebuttal. And that is the question whether it's consistent with Terry and the reasonable suspicion standard simply to follow, if you will, a per se rule saying that all dispatches alleging attempted burglary describe a crime of violence. It's therefore reasonable to think that all people who might be associated with that are carrying a gun, therefore Terry frisks are okay all the time.
Certainly the Supreme Court, this court, has regularly said, the government does not dispute this, that you can't have a per se rule. You have to always look at the circumstances. It's an objective test. The question is, did this officer have reasonable suspicion that Mr. Snow was presently armed and dangerous to him. He doesn't have to have probable cause. He just has a reasonable suspicion. Critical to this are of course, the facts. The facts that within no more than 2 minutes and no more than two blocks away, the truck fitting the exact description was pulled over. The one person in the truck fits the clothing description of what the 911 caller said. As Judge Romer said, I see a man trying to get into a house.
So it's burglary plus very close time and geography proximity as opposed to all the way across town 2 hours later?
Exactly, and that's exactly what the district judge said. If you look at in the transcript, which is part of the record, understanding your Rule 30 reference earlier, if you look at the transcript,
Judge
McKinney says, you know, if you, I don't have the words in front of me, but Judge McKinney basically says, you know, this was an hour later, no. This was on the other side of town, no. You can't just pull over a green and black pickup truck. But we're within minutes. Terry isn't just, a crime that is going to happen. It's a crime that just happened. And the dispatcher tells the police officer, this is a residential burglary. Now, clearly, and they don't contest the stop, and clearly under Pennsylvania versus Mims and its progeny, the police, if the vehicle is lawfully stopped, they have a right to ask the driver to exit. The frisk never occurred, as the courts mentioned this morning, but clearly the officer had a right to order the frisk. The record is the officer never touched Mr. Snow. There's no evidence they ever touched him. He ordered to get out, put his hands up against his truck. This happens in seconds, which is another critical factor.
But the order itself is just kind of a one-sentence order, get out and put your hands up.
So exactly.
It seems to me, rationally, one could say the Terry process begins then.
I understand that argument, and the government isn't concerned in this sense. If this court says that's part of the Terry frisk, the United States still says the officer absolutely was authorized to do that because he's two blocks away from a burglary that almost just happened by Mr. Snow. And
or at least you would say
logically.
One could think that. I mean, we don't know what Mr. Snow was doing trying to get in the window.
We don't. And what happened after the fact I know is not relevant.
I mean, you remember the beer summit, I assume.
Yes. But in any case, he certainly had the authority to order him under these circumstances to submit to a frisk. This court in the Barnett case said, Judge Wood, you've referenced this in some way, that burglary is a crime in which we expect people to be carrying weapons.
And that the use of weapons is always, it's always reasonable to believe that.
It is. And thank God for what these police do, I will just say, because...
I was going to say thank God for Barnett.
Because had they not responded the way they did, one of them may have been shot. So I'll leave that unless the court has any more questions of me. Thank you.
Now, come on up, Mr. Robinetter, and we're going to give you your full 5 minutes.
Hello.
Good morning. May it please the court. I just want to comment on a few things that the government talked about. First of all, the absurdity that an officer would have to cross-examine an individual he pulled over suspected of burglary. We're arguing no such thing. The officer is not required in all cases to even ask questions of the suspect, let alone engage in some sort of cross-examination. As Terry noted...
Or the dispatcher. I mean, is the officer supposed to say, you know, I need to pull over for 5 minutes, but I can get a more fulsome account from the dispatcher?
No, or the dispatcher for that matter. And we don't quarrel with what the 911 caller said or the ability of officers to rely on the 911 caller to respond to this incident. The dispatcher did apply the label of burglary, which the officer then relied upon in trying to justify his search. What I was trying to get at was that Terry notes that, you know, the security of police officers is important, but there's still the presumption that warrantless searches are unreasonable. There is no general warrant based upon officer safety.
But this is far from that. There's an account that this man has just tried to burglarize a house. He's in a very distinctive vehicle. He matches the description. that the observer who did, you know, as we know, give her name and phone number to the 911 person. So there are a lot of things that take this away from a general warrant. It's not like the police said, oh, let's stop a car and see if the driver has a gun.
We have a lot of things pointing to reasonable suspicion to make an investigatory stop. We have a lot of details about Mr. Snow, his dress, the appearance of his car, and we don't dispute the ability of officers to respond and pull this car over or this truck over and make an investigation. However,
so are you saying the stop of Mr. Snow was justified?
Yes, we have conceded that the stop was justified based on
and
the information.
And doesn't Barnett establish that a frisk was warranted given the connection between burglary and weapons?
I think a case like Barnett has to be read on its facts. Otherwise, we're creating a per se rule that burglaries allow searches.
I think that we said that burglary is one of the crimes which by its very nature is so suggestive of the presence and use of weapons that it is always reasonable to believe that the person suspected of committing the crime might be armed. I think that's what we said.
That statement appears to sidestep a totality of the circumstances test. The analogy we used in our brief was a suspect accused of a violent crime who's found empty-handed, wearing nothing but skin-tight undergarments. No matter how violent that crime may have been, there's no reasonable suspicion that that suspect is presently armed and dangerous.
That would qualify the observation in Barnett about what's usually going to be the case. That certainly is not Mr. Snow, who's wearing loose-fitting blue jeans and a hoodie. It's a January day, probably a very reasonable way to be dressed in Indianapolis at that time of the year. So he had plenty of places to conceal a gun. He's not your guy, you know, in the Speedo.
That's true, but those are not facts that were relied upon by the officer. Now, it may have been true. The officer could have sized up Mr. Snow, could have noticed things about him and his demeanor that would have suggested that he was armed.
Maybe you would say an officer couldn't have a reasonable suspicion that somebody's armed if it's a warm, sunny day and he's walking down the beach. But that's so far from this. Don't you think Barnett describes the majority of cases?
It's very possible that it does. However, when standing before the neutral magistrate and asked, why did you decide to search Mr. Snow, the officer's only answer was, I thought I was investigating a burglary.
That's a subjective point. Don't you think objectively there's enough here?
No, I don't think so. I think we had a lot of facts that were inconsistent, not only with a burglary, but with Mr. Snow having been armed and dangerous at the time.
Give me two facts.
Two facts. First of all, the officer's observation of Mr. Snow when he pulled him over. Mr. Snow pulled over, he handed his license, he handed his keys. These are not the behaviors of someone who's agitated, about to strike out at an officer. It would be silly to hand over your keys and then shoot the officer, get out of the truck, pick up the keys, get back in, and try to drive off.
I think that would be the actions of somebody who didn't want to get out of the car.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe just about everyone in this room would not want to get out of the car when pulled over.
Yeah, but I believe that we would all get out of the car when pulled over.
Once he was asked, he did exit the car, and I think that's what the rest of us would do too.
And when did the officers actually observe that he was wearing clothes that pretty closely matched what the caller had described? They couldn't have seen that in driving car very well.
It's unclear what the officers saw about his clothing before or after Mr. Snow got out of the car. Defense counsel argued that he wouldn't have been able to see whether the jeans were tight fitting or loose fitting or whatever. I see my time has expired.
Did you want to make a final statement? I'm going to give you that.
Certainly, Your Honor. I just ask for these reasons the court reverse the lower court with an order to grant the motion to suppress.
I just want to thank Mr. McIver and Mr. Robinetter and always Ms. Shrupp for taking on this case and for doing such a wonderful job. Your senior law students, you're going to be great. You did a wonderful job. Amazing, under a deluge of questions. And Mr. Warden, it's always lovely to see you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So the case is going to be taken under advisement, and we're going to go to lunch. This court is in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30, when six other cases and God knows how many lawyers will be tortured. Bye-bye.